This is Word of Mouth.
Your questions answered, your state explored.
And we're staying on script, talking about borders with the game that transcends them, the world's game.
Yes, people, we are talking about soccer, or football, if you want to be universal with it.
Right. In case you missed it, the Men's World Cup is wrapping up, or has wrapped up, which may have been easier to miss this year since the U.S. men's team failed to qualify for the tournament.
I feel like they're an internal disappointment.
The men's team.
The men's team. And you and I were talking about this earlier. I didn't grow up playing soccer, but I can pinpoint the exact moment I became a soccer fan. And that was the 1999 Women's World Cup.
Oh, my God. That moment.
The two very best teams in this World Cup going at it. And China's had the edge lately. Not in the overall.
Well, I was 9 years old, and I think I had started to play soccer by that point. And I think I had actually gone into the yard, and I remember my parents were having a party. Everyone was sort of gathered around the TV, and I remember hearing the moment from inside, this roar. Like the whole room just erupted, and I ran inside in time to see Brandi Chastain just like falling to the ground with her hands in the air, and she whipped off her shirt, and I saw the whole women's team running across the field toward her, and I think that was just the moment that I was oh my God, soccer, it's my favorite sport.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that, well, one of the first times that you've seen professional soccer players who are women competing on the world stage and like in our country and inspiring not only young girls.
That was women's soccer star Morgan Andrews. Does that name sound familiar to you?
I can't say it does.
Well, Justine, Morgan was born and raised in Milford and just so happens to be the LeBron of New Hampshire in kind of that youth sports prodigy way.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, is it fair to call you the LeBron of New Hampshire soccer?
Well, as much as I appreciate that, I don't know. There are quite a few other amazing soccer players who I feel would deserve that same honor.
All right. Well, let me interrupt then and let me make the case for you as the LeBron of New Hampshire soccer, or maybe even past the LeBron. So you were back-to-back Gatorade Player of the Year. I think that's happened a handful of times, under 10 times in the history of the award. ESPN's top-rated player in the class of 2013. An all-state football player, is that right too?
Yeah, my junior year. I kicked from a high school football team my junior and senior year.
And you were also a state champ in soccer as well. So, I mean, that's my pitch.
Well, it's quite an honor. But to my brother's defense, I do have to say that they have made quite an impact on themselves. Matt is a Green Beret in the Army, and Mike is just recently won Boston Public School Teacher of the Year. So I'd say that they're making probably more of an impact than I am.
Okay. Maybe you're a little bit more modest than the king. So you're recently starting your pro career. I think you were playing like semi-pro ball as a teenager.
Yeah.
But you're playing out for the National Women's Soccer League in Seattle for the Seattle Reign. And I just wanted to hear a bit on what do you think people should know about both the league and then the players that you're competing with and against?
The league is composed of, I'm not kidding, the greatest soccer players in the world. Players coming internationally and those who are homegrown here in the United States. And first off, a complete honor to compete in this league. And second off, it honestly doesn't have the respect that it deserves, but our fan base is really loyal and we love our fans, but we're still trying to find every day a way to bring more people into our league and to help bring in the support that it deserves. But the league itself is competitive. Right now it is composed of 9 teams. There were 10 teams last year. I competed for the Boston Breakers, and unfortunately, right before the season started, our team had folded. So now we're back down to 9 teams and with hopefully an expansion in our future.
What is up? Why do men flop so much? And I feel like I don't see it in the women's game.
Yeah, that's a great question. I am not necessarily against selling a foul. There can be a strategy in game management to being able to draw a foul and specific parts of the field. However, I'm not a fan of flopping. Of course, there is a difference between the men's and women's games, and although sometimes a tackle might be harder against a male opponent, women aren't really seen as floppers in our game. But in the women's game, we're still fighting for the respect to be able to play the game, unfortunately. And I think that goes into the aggressiveness that is played, especially in the NWSL. We play with a lot of aggressiveness, and we're a forward-pushing league, and we attack a lot. And it's one of those things that we just don't do. When a foul is drawn, it's usually earned.
You have this incredible... I'm just going to take a look at this, and I want to read maybe one or two of these, but you have 8 separate tweets that kind of go on to highlight some of the disparities between equality and the men's to the women's game, both, you know, in sports in general. And I just want to start with the first one. I'm just curious because I found this one really, it's a good jump off point. But you say it's a push around the globe to make it known that better is not good enough. The theme sparks stories of empowerment, but also observance of inequalities. Hashtag athletes for progress.
Right.
And so can you get into that a little bit? And like, what is, you know, the difference between better and equal?
Well, you know, that tweet basically was sparked by the fact that women in sport, although people say it's so much better because, oh, hey, we're getting a paycheck every month, or we actually get to play the sport, that doesn't mean that we're equal. Some of us aren't even making minimum wage to start off with. While a lot of men who are in our same position are able to afford homes or cars even. Or
work a single job.
Or work a single job, exactly. Have the luxury of being able to focus on their sport or what is considered their job, exactly. And so that's one of, I'd say that's one of the more frustrating things to hear is when people say, oh, you should be grateful for having things better than the women before you. Yes, that's absolutely a thing, but that doesn't mean that we should stop fighting for what's right and for equality and equity. And so for me personally, you know, better is just not good enough. And that will be my answer until we have equal pay and equal respect. And that also means equal television time. Very little time is spent speaking about women in sports on television. And that's so important because for children to be watching television and only see men, then that's put into their minds that, you know, men are better at sports or men are the only ones who are allowed to play a sport for a living. And that's just not the case.
There's another tweet that you had that I thought got to this, and just props to you for using the platform, especially being in the early portion of your career and just using your platform so strategically. But you had talked about, and other folks had talked about, and with the hashtag around athletes for progress, had kind of pointed out that in the leadership positions, even within women's sports, are still very male-dominated. And I want your take on that, but I just want to throw one more thing out here. As I was reaching out to every college coach, D1, D2, within the state, they were all men.
Right. I believe there's 2 out of the 9 coaches in our league who are women. And I think that, you know, just going off of that tweet, there's a definite lack of women in leadership roles. And that itself leads to inequality in the league and just the sport in general. There should be more women in powerful roles leading the way for those under them. It's disappointing. And I think that if we can start to break through and find equality in those leadership roles, it'll pave a way for those under them to make those same impacts and at different levels within the sport.
You definitely strike me as a person that is solution oriented, right? Like, here's this problem. Like, here's how we take the steps to resolve or understand it better. And then how do we make change? And there is another tweet in there, or I think you've just used your platform well enough to encourage girls to play more, to not look at athletics as this sort of masculine thing that, you know, had been the case. But putting that question to you, how do you get girls to play more?
Well, I think it all goes back to what these girls see every day. And if they can see that women in powerful positions, women who are playing professionally, women who are playing semi-professionally, women who are on television, women who are commentators, you know, women who are in the media, who are on television, if they can see that consistently every day, then they realize that, oh, that person looks like me and that can be me. If young women, young girls are exposed to women who look like them in powerful positions, then they realize that this is something that they can do also. And I think that's the way that we can get girls to play and to compete and to dream things that right now seem impossible, but that are very possible for them to do. And that goes back to television time, to air time, to the exposure of women in the media. Because right now, everything's on the phone, right? Everything that we see is on a screen, whether that be the television, the computer, our phone. And if there's a male dominance in our sport, then that's how it's going to be, because girls aren't able to see themselves in that position.
Morgan, I've got nothing else. You're a spectacular human being, and I appreciate your time.
I really appreciate that. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me and to honor the women's game.